This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. Of course, this is Enterprise BizBytes. We're going to be with you until about 1 o'clock this afternoon. Joined in the studio today by
Arvind Varaj
and Christine Wong.
So if you'd like to get in touch with the show, as usual, you can get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Stories that we're going to be running through today. We've had a bit of a reshuffle. It seems like a nice phrase to be using right now. But we are going to be starting off now with how China's social credit system has blocked people from taking 11 million flights and 4 million train trips. Mm-hmm. A bit of an update on a story that we've done previously. Then looking into how Google Maps wants to know what you're eating and how you liked it. We'll then be looking at Microsoft's Shout Ice is an AI bot that can also converse like a human, which is giving Google a run for their money. Estonia will be mapping the DNA of over 10% of its population. And a startup that will make buying a dog online safer and more ethical.
Yeah.
Should be interesting. Right. So the credit system in China has blocked, as I mentioned, people from taking 11.14 million flights and 4.25 million high-speed train trips. This is numbers from the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
Bear that in mind. We're included in a report by China's state-run outlet Global Times. It's unclear what offences have targeted in the travel ban that have been committed. So it's actually a collection of blacklists, of which there are more than a dozen at the national level. Each list is based on similar offences like misbehaviour on planes and trains or failing to abide by a court judgment and determines the punishments individuals face. Could be even things like they throttle your internet speed to blocking your application for a loan. So it's not clear which list had so many plane and train trips blocked, but a former official, Ho Yun-chun, is quoted as saying that the system needs to be improved so that, quote, discredited people become bankrupt. They then move on to how the court publishes the names and IDs of debtors on its website. Of course, these are banned from plane and high-speed train travel, can't stay at 4- and 5-star hotels, send their children to expensive schools, book cheap hire cars, or make luxury purchases online. Some provinces even play a recorded message when someone tries to call a blacklisted debtor, informing the caller that the person that they want to speak to has outstanding debts. And in May, a short cartoon with the photographs of these debtors' faces began playing at movie theaters, on buses, and on public notice boards with a voiceover that said, "Come, come, look at these debtors. It's a person who borrows money and doesn't pay it back."
Wow.
Now, as we probably know, saving face amongst Chinese people is a very big thing. And if this has been published everywhere and anybody can find out if you're a debtor, your name is in the papers, it's on a website, even on the side of buses, even in, you know, cartoons, this has got to be severely upsetting, right?
I mean, there's holding people accountable for their actions and then there's like national shaming.
Right.
It feels almost kind of like a weird sort of like social eugenics system where, like, you know, if you're not good enough by our standards, you don't even deserve to live to live comfortably or anything like that. So I'm just curious to know, you know, with the debtor situation and all that, like how that, you know, what else could they block from other people, other offenses, and how, where is the line?
I'd say one of the problems that started to cause this as well, and of course, there's a burgeoning middle class happening in mainland China right now. But one of the issues was around about in 2007, 2008, a lot of the banks went on this spree where they were giving out multiple credit cards to people who had just turned 18. So I knew people that were 18, 19, 20 that had 5 or 6 credit cards from 5 or 6 separate banks, just given to them, you know, without any of the procedures of having to apply for it or anything like that. It was just given to them on their 18th birthday. And then they wonder why they have a debt problem.
Maybe it's them just trying to reverse the mistakes that they made in the past, or they're trying to get people to stop taking so many loans or something in the future. And it sounds extreme, but I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, like, if there's a positive angle to this, if the Chinese government didn't have a choice. choice, or maybe they have like a long term plan. They sort of go like, you know, it's so bad to get into debt and to have outstanding loans that you don't pay that they want to discourage younger people from getting into the same problems that the generation now has gotten into.
I'm not sure national shaming is the way to do it, though.
No, it's not.
And also, do we know if any of these debtors, after this has happened, have they actually paid off their debts?
We don't
because
know.
If they have, then as awful as it is, at least the method has been proven effective. But if nothing has happened and, you know, more serious social issues occur, then, you know, there's not really a price to be paid for this sort of treatment.
Yeah, I'm also thinking, like, I mean, this, what they are doing sounds extreme to us and all, and it's, you know, like, it's public shaming, and you don't want to go watch a movie and then see your face pop up before the movie starts. I mean, that's one of the most horrifying things that I can think about. But at the core, their credit system sounds like it could be effective. Like, everyone has their credit systems. We have our credit system secrets and stuff that we use. It's not as extreme as the, you know, what's happening in China. I think in some aspects they should, or other countries should, implement it as well. Not to shame people, but have you guys ever been on a plane where someone is they're rude?
Yes.
They're constantly harassing the attendants, and they just don't know how to behave on a plane. People
right.
like that should be, you know, if there's a point system, these people shouldn't be allowed to fly that easily. There's
You've
also
had personal experience of that, have you?
Yeah, on planes, like, many times. But then there's also this this story from a while back. So my parents have a condo that they own. This is from like 10 years ago, and they used to rent it out because we didn't stay there because we had pets and stuff. So there was one tenant who came in who stayed there for about 4 months. He paid like the first 2 months. He stayed there for 6 months. He paid for the first 2 months, and then he didn't pay for the first month, second month, third month, and by the fourth month, he just abandoned the place and ran away. He said that he was the only one staying there at first, but then when my parents checked in, he was there with another woman, and there was a baby. And when he abandoned the place, and when he just like ran off to God knows where, he left the baby's soiled Pampers on the flooring, on the parquet flooring.
Wow.
And it was left there for so many weeks that we had to change the flooring.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because it had gotten termites.
Oh my word.
Yes. So if
was that baby eating?
I have no idea. But if you have people like this, and there are so many people like this and so many horror stories, I have a couple of friends who don't even rent out their property because they are afraid of tenants that might come in. So if there was a credit system, then it would make it easier for them to sort of look into these people's backgrounds and go like, should I actually give my new condo out to this person? You know, is it worth it or is it not?
Right.
Yeah.
But like, just to kind of go back to Christine's point, when somebody has, you know, paid off their debt and they're off of that list, you know, your time has been served, so to speak, hasn't it? You know?
Yeah.
So then does it reset to zero, or are you still on the watch list or whatever it was for a potential debtor? I think that's the kind of worry that I would have. You know, once you've been tarred with that brush, you know, maybe it's going to be a bit of an issue.
I honestly don't think that a lot of countries can follow the kind of system that China's using now, because like Christine said, we don't know if it resets or if they're just in there permanently, if they're constantly being watched for like future you know, like future for being a debtor in the future again. But I think like if it was refined, then it could be used for a few other countries. Even like, we could use a credit system and it could be helpful for certain things.
So let's ask people at home then, you know, what they think about it. A credit system like China have got, minus the public shaming, you know, stuff like blacklisting people from being able to travel. Don't we have something like that for people who avoid tax though, and they've been caught, they're not allowed to leave the country, or people who haven't paid their loans back, student loans and things like
student
that.
Student loans, and yeah, I think tax is way heavier, I think, but like student loans, like PTPTN, then they get blacklisted and stuff.
Okay. So do you think a credit rating system like China has got is something that could be useful here, and you know, how would we implement it? Give us some feedback on this. Let us know what you think. 018-789-8899 is our WhatsApp number. Of course, you can get us on Twitter as well. We were going to speak to you about how Google Maps want to know what you're eating and how you liked it. I think we're going to skip over that story and move on to a bit of music before we come back about the Xiao Ai story. So we'll take a very short break. Music coming up from Graveyard with The Apple and the Tree. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Christine Wong,
Arvind Yuvraj.
Starting off today's show with how China's social credit system has blocked people from taking 11 million flights and 4 million train trips. It's a system used to punish citizens for bad behavior, with numerous blacklists preventing them from traveling, getting loans or jobs, staying in hotels, and even limiting internet access. They intend to roll out a more comprehensive national social credit system in 2020, which has gained comparisons to the show Black Mirror, of course. If you've got any thoughts on this, do let us know on WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or of course on Twitter at BFM Radio. Next story is about Microsoft's Xiao Ice, an AI bot that can also converse like a human. What's going on?
So that was a conversation that someone had in China with the Xiao Ice social chat bot by Microsoft.
Okay.
And the,
so one of those voices was the bot.
Yes. Yes. So that was a full-on conversation. So what it is that Xiao Ice is this social chat bot that Microsoft has created that can converse like a human person, and it's quite similar to Google's Duplex, which can carry on conversations sounding like a human as well.
That's scary.
Terrifying. The main difference between Duplex and Xiao Ice is that Duplex can make calls for you using Google Assistant, but you can have a conversation with Xiao Ice.
Just for fun.
For fun.
Okay.
Or as a virtual assistant, or whatever you want, really.
Okay.
But you can have a conversation with this bot like a normal person. And as you heard the clip, it's very difficult to distinguish who's real and who isn't.
And who's bot.
Now, the actual transcript of the of that conversation is like translated is something along the lines of just saying, you know, how are you? Are you feeling stressed? Da, 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 da. What is particularly weird about the conversation, though, and human about it is that Shais, who was the higher pitched voice in that conversation, will say things like and interrupts the other caller, and in fact interrupts her specifically to say, oh, one more thing. There will be strong winds tonight, so don't forget to close the window before you go to sleep. So,
based on your location, I'd assume, as well.
Based on your location, I guess the weather report, I guess based on the time as well of when the call is happening.
Wow.
You know, it's completely insane. According to the Verge science reporter Angela Chen, who's fluent in Mandarin, the actual voice as well is really realistic and the accent is on point. It's not like a normal a kind of AI voice that it doesn't quite get those tones, which is for Chinese.
Doesn't sound robotic at all.
Yeah. So how this works is that Xiao Ice was originally only meant to kind of work with text conversations through WeChat, but Microsoft has now started allowing the chatbot to call people on their phones. So Xiao Ice can be conversing with you in WeChat and then stop and call you, and then you can just talk to her. Oh, God.
At this point, I think it's a
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so since they've launched the phone capability in last August, she's talked with over 600,000 people. And it's going to be available soon, I believe, throughout Asia, starting June 1. So, you know, if you want to talk to Xiao Ice, you can soon. And they also intend on introducing features to help Xiao Ice create a 10-minute customized audio story for kids in about 20 seconds.
Wow.
It's like it's almost like an extension of the whole Hatsune Miku thing, where she, you know, she's like a virtual celebrity, because Xiao Ice has 500 million friends on WeChat and more than 16 channels for Chinese users to interact with it through WeChat and other popular messaging services, as well as her own TV show, as well as her own poetry. So
Wait, she has how many friends?
500 million
friends
on WeChat.
Oh my word.
A bot that can talk to you. Basically, we're already living in her. China is already living in her.
How much of that, though, is just curiosity, you know, to find out how it works? And how much of that is, you know, for people who, I don't know, need a virtual friend?
I mean, curiosity or not, the AI works.
Yeah.
You know, even, and it's clear, because in that demo as well, it's this whole conversation, and it sounds so realistic. And you can also, and also part of the conversation was, would you like me to schedule a wake-up call for you? And then it's like, oh, yeah, okay. And the bot itself is like, how about the same time at 8:30 a.m.? So, you know, it can predict what you might want or what you are right. going to say and respond to that, not even just immediately, but so immediate that it can cut you off.
I mean, I was watching the Jeff posted it a while ago, the Google Duplex one as well.
Yeah, that's also terrifying. Mm-hmm.
But the conversation was really good. You know, they asked the assistant to call a hairdresser's and book an appointment, and it just went through the whole thing. And even when the hairdressers were saying, oh, I don't have something available at that time, yeah. you know, the bot was like, okay, well, what time do you have available? And it was like, you know, the pretend thinking.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
The one that was more impressive than that was Duplex's, the voice that sounds like Satya Nadella.
Right, yeah.
So he was supposed to call a restaurant and make a booking for at 7 p.m. And the person in the restaurant said, oh, for seven people. And the voice actually goes, no, it's four people for 7 p.m. So it knows how to switch itself almost immediately. It picks up on all these tones. And then the way it changes is it has all these like ums and ahs
yeah.
as if it's an actual person that's yeah. making those decisions.
Brilliant.
What is this? Especially terrifying about all of this is that AI bots have come so far so quickly, because Xiaoyi was launched in 2014 but now can speak like a human mm-hmm. in the space of 4 years. It has counterparts in India, Japan and Indonesia, and also the US as well, but those bots so far have not, you know, reached the capabilities. I mean, the one in the US was Zoe, which is a successor to the very ill-fated Thai.ai chat bot, which I don't, that was a whole issue where I think it learned too much and then went a bit nuts. But none are as popular or as advanced as Xiaoyi's. Mm. And it's actually kind of surprising that Microsoft hasn't shifted this to Cortana immediately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Xiaoyi's is currently limited to China and many in the West aren't even aware it exists mm-hmm. despite its fame. But clearly Microsoft has the technology. So between Microsoft and this technology, and Google, with Google Duplex, I think we're all going to just start speaking to robots soon.
No, there is like a barrier between how things work here in Asia and then how things work over in the West. Because in the West, if you look at like Alexa and stuff, it's still very mono and robotic.
Very much so, yeah.
You know that it's Alexa and you know it's Cortana and stuff. But there's this, I read this thing, Alan Black, he's a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon, and he's actually the pioneer who came up with computer markups for computer language in 1996. So he's the one who tried to put the ums and ahs and the how to emphasize on commas and stuff in computer language. And he says that the problem with speaking like this is that humans tend to mimic speech and language. So what's going to happen is that when you hear your voice assistant with the ums and the ahs, you're going to do the same thing to it, and it is going to pick up from you. And language, one, could be lost, or it's going to delay conversations a lot. Because as the machine starts to learn from you, the same way you're learning from it, it's going to have a lot more ums and ahs and lose focus on what you're actually saying. So the question that he's asking is, what do we actually want from voice assistants? Do we want information or do we want companionship? Mm-hmm. Because with companionship, then you get a friend in the voice assistant that sounds like an actual human being, which could help a few people who need that sort of thing from their voice assistants. But if we just want information, then it should be precise and just to the point. Like, we shouldn't have the gaps and the pauses and the friendly you know, puns and stuff just put in our messages to the voice assistant. We should just be like, tell me how to go to this place, and the voice assistant should tell you in however short a time it can.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a very short break. Moving on, we've got some music coming up, a couple of tracks back to back. It is the Beach Boys with I Get Around, followed by Queen with I Want to Break Free. And when we get back, how Estonia are to map DNA of over 10% of its population. Then we're wrapping up with a startup that wants to make buying a dog online safer and more ethical. In the meantime, we are talking about China's social credit system that blocked 11 million flights and 4 million train trips from data that's been released from April. Let us know what you think about that. 018-789-8899. Do you think we should have that kind of credit rating system here in Malaysia? Should we be blacklisting punishing people for serious debts, preventing them from traveling, getting loans or jobs, staying in hotels, or even limiting internet access. We do have a message so far before we take a break.
Yeah, this comes from Prakash, and they say that they agree with the credit system as they run a nursing center. Over the years, we accumulated up to almost 200,000 in bad debt because of lots of cases where children dump their parents there, pay for the first month, and then disappear.
That's awful.
That is awful.
Okay, we have to take a break. Music. The Beach Boys, I Get Around. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
With you all the way through until 1 o'clock today. We started off the show with China's social credit system. An update: they've blocked people from taking 11 million flights and 4 million train trips. These are numbers from the end of April. It's a system that's used to punish citizens for bad behavior with numerous blacklists, preventing them from traveling, getting loans or jobs, staying in hotels, and even limiting their internet access. We're asking you, should we have a credit rating system similar? Should we be able to blacklist people on the basis of their debt and limit their access to internet and that kind of thing? Let us know, 018-789-8899. Moving on to story number three, I believe, yes, Estonia, to map the DNA of over 10% of its population. Come on then, Arvind. Why?
Yeah, so they're doing this high-tech DNA database holding the genetic details of over 150,000 residents to improve the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of chronic disease. Yeah, so this is being carried out by the Genome Center. They want to map the genes of 11.7%, more specifically, which amounts to 11.7% out of the 1.3 million people who live in Estonia. And this is costing them something like 23.4 million ringgit if we convert it to our currency, which is quite huge.
Small change. I'm guessing somebody could pull out one of their bags and loan us some money.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
They say that the more genetic data they have, the greater their precision in scientific research and the faster they will be able to discover gene variants linked to the disease. It's intended to find and map genetic variations and will build on existing genetic records for over 52,000 Estonians collected since the center opened in 2001. So they have, they've been doing this for a long, long time now. 2001, so what, 17 years. I think they're collecting and now they're comparing the genes with the people that they had before. And then they're trying to see how these things maybe mutate, how they evolve. And
how they've correlated between areas and perhaps, okay.
Yeah, and see how they can prevent the disease from getting worse in the future, I guess. They're asking for volunteers in Estonia. Volunteers can give their DNA samples in hospitals and private laboratories of project partner SynLab. So it's pretty, I think it's very interesting. I know that some startups have already started to do this because they're building a sort of like Noah's Ark kind of situation in case we need the genomes of people, I guess. But this one is, you know, it makes more, I don't want to say makes more sense. It has a better goal in mind, I guess. It's just to prevent disease in the future.
Yeah, I mean, cool. I mean, this is the thing with me and kind of DNA collecting anything that collects data, be it biological or technological or whatever, on anyone. I always feel that there's some sort of
ulterior motive,
really evil ulterior motive. But I mean, I can't really complain as well. I'm always the kind of person that's been interested in like DNA and where we come from genetically and stuff like that. So I don't know about this. It sounds interesting that the whole country is just putting this into action like this.
It's funny you should say that because they can't use it to track their family tree and stuff. The government has said, the government of Estonia has said that they cannot use it to track parentage or family trees or where they come from.
Then what's
why?
The point?
They're using it specifically just to track disease to make sure that the
population... Surely they could kill two birds with one stone.
They could do multiple things.
They say that's a breach of privacy. Because if they use it to see who you are, then you'll be able to know where the DNA comes from.
Ah, that's fair.
Yeah, so they're not bothered about who the DNA comes from. They just want to make sure that the DNA from 2001 matched against the DNA of the people from 2018. They want to see what has changed in between and how, like, is there any disease that's mutating? Is there something that's evolving? And what they can do to make their population, like, a healthier population, I guess.
It's interesting because I've done some research fairly recently into, you know, gene tracking and family heritage and that kind of stuff. And it's not a cheap process to do.
No.
The basic, I think, test is about $80 US. And I think Malaysia has even stopped you from sending out the samples from Malaysia. You have to send them via Singapore or somewhere else. I don't know why, but this is something that's happened fairly recently. From what I understand, I don't know if things have changed. But if you want to look at like both your parents' lines, of you know, the lineage from both parents, it's extremely expensive.
Yeah.
You know, like we're talking thousands of dollars to be able to do that, for it to be accurate as well. And there's no kind of be-all, end-all. What I've been reading is that some labs do it differently to one other lab, and they do it differently to a different lab. So you're never kind of given the true, accurate representation of your lineage either.
Yeah, but I don't know why people want to do it in the first place, like find your, you know, where you come from, like the family tree and stuff. I'm always afraid that I'm going to find out that my great-great-great-grandfather was someone who was committed for arson or something.
It's not exactly the history, but I've always been curious about it, just because, like, I know that, like, somewhere back in the history of my family, at some point we were immigrants to Malaysia from China, I guess, because I'm Chinese, right? But I've always been curious about what happened, and I've been told that there's, like, for example, there's some smidgen of Thai blood somewhere in me.
Right.
So I'm just curious to see, like, if that holds any water. And
exactly.
You know, that's something that, you know, if the family stories can be backed up by science.
Right.
You know?
So, I mean, there's times when I would get together with my family and we'd have these discussions, and it would be raised, you know, oh, do you realize that you have some Italian blood in you? And do you realize you have some of it? And I'm like, okay, well, where's the proof of that? You know, I don't know any of that. You know, so I genuinely, just to kind of satisfy my curiosity, I think, and to kind of say to my aunties and uncles, no, this entire time you've had it wrong, you know.
There's none of that.
I'm just English, you know, that's it, done. But yeah, it's a great idea though. I mean, especially if they're getting like 10% of the entire population voluntarily to come along.
Yeah, voluntarily is a key word here.
Yeah, I think so. And the fact that they can't store any of the data that you don't really want. So Chris, you know, it's okay. Yep.
Yay!
Right, let's take a break. Music, let's have a little bit of Steve Earle and Lucia Micharelli with One More Cup of Coffee. And then when we get back, our final story of the day, it's about a startup that wants to make buying a dog online safer and more ethical. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I thought Audrey Raj was going to tell me how to save money there, and now I have to tune into it, do I?
Yeah.
When is it happening?
Every Tuesday, 7:45.
All right, final story of the day so far. Well, it is. A startup that wants to make buying a dog online safer and more ethical. Leave me alone. I've been up since 4:30, Arvin. Yeah. Don't laugh at me. Christine, you can stop laughing too. Come on. I'm a very tired young boy today. Right. Anyway, get on with this story. Let me get out of here.
It says, this is specifically for the UK. It says that people there buy 1.5 million puppies every year. And most of these transactions are done online. So they see an ad for a puppy or something, and then they call or contact the dealer or the breeder, and then they buy the puppy from them. But the problem is, a lot of these puppy farmers cannot be verified, and you don't know where they're getting the puppies from. Most of them have very questionable ways of getting the puppies. And that's why there's a startup called Tailwise, and they've built a monitored, curated market for dog breeders. So the only breeders allowed on the platform are those that Tailwise can verify. This means they're subject to a rigorous vetting process, and each dog is checked by a vet before it's released to the buyer. And they're doing this because 20% of the 1.5 million dogs bought online each year die after 6 months, which amounts to roughly about 300,000 dogs. And this is actually a huge problem, even you know, all over the world, not just in the UK, because breeders don't have the best practices when they breed the dogs. They sort of force the parent dogs to breed because they just need to keep churning out puppies, and they can sell each puppy for about $3,000 to $5,000. And these puppies are not healthy because they're not getting the nutrition that they need, they're not getting the care that they need from the mama dog, because they pull the mama dog away to sort of make it breed again.
At the crucial point.
Yeah, the crucial point. So a lot of these puppies die, a lot of people end up with unhealthy puppies. It's not, you know, it's just a bad situation all around. So in this case, when you sign up for Tailwise, the vetting works both ways. The service verifies the identity of all buyers as well. It also quizzes them about their home, about their lifestyle, dog preferences, and their motivation for getting a dog. And then it's used to pair them with a suitable breeder. And there's also an aftercare service because buyers and breeders can keep in touch through the website. If a problem emerges or the buyer has a question, they can reach out to the person they bought the dog from. So it's basically giving people a healthier and more verified way to get their puppies, because not all puppy farmers are bad. Some of them just have a family of dogs and they give birth to puppies maybe a couple of times a year, which is normal. And then they sell off the puppies to people who want dogs in their house, you know, because they can't keep, let's say, six puppies at a time, which is fine, as long as they're not buying it from puppy mills where the animals are being forced to give birth to puppies every couple of months and every few months.
First of all, I love how much this story has forced you to say the word puppies.
Yeah.
Great, cool, fantastic.
He likes his puppies.
Roughly about 101 times, I'm assuming. But anyways, no, I'm really such a fan of this. You know, I think that there's a big problem with stray animals, especially here in Southeast Asia. And to be able to find a system where you can, even if not fix the situation, at least start to prevent it from happening more in the future, I think it's fantastic. And I mean, you know, I'm just a fan of the whole concept. They've really thought everything through, and I just wanted to come here so I can have
I was just going to say, do you imagine something like that happening here?
It'll take a while.
Right.
It'll take a while. Because even here, like, there's so... our stray population is so bad. And we have, like, adoption drives every week in Jayawan and stuff. MDDB shows up there. They have, like a moving group of puppies where they take to each center. And every month that passes, the chances of a puppy being adopted falls by at least 25%. Because the more the puppy grows and they grow fast, people don't want adult dogs. They want puppies that are small and cute and cuddly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So getting adult dogs adopted is near impossible. And people always want to buy dogs because they are seen as like status symbols. You have like a husky or corgi. I love corgis, but the thing is they are very expensive and I don't know where they come from. And most pet shops here don't have the proper ethics to sell those puppies.
No.
I agree. Okay, it's time for us to wrap up for the day. But let's quickly run through the stories that we covered for today. We started off with how China's social credit system has blocked people from taking 11 million flights, 4 million train trips. We then skipped story number two about the Google Maps, and then we ended up on Microsoft Shout Eyes.
Yeah, and Shout Eyes is an AI bot that can converse with you on the phone like a normal human being because our jobs weren't already threatened enough.
Then we spoke about how Estonia is going to map out the DNA of over 10% of their population. Then we finished with a startup called Tailwise that wants to make buying a dog online safer and more ethical.
That's all the time that we have for today, but don't forget, of course, we will be back tomorrow, same time, same place at noon. And if you missed any part of this show, you can download the BFM app from the Apple App Store or from Google Play. Don't go anywhere, though, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, of course, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. As one of Pakatan Harapan's rising young leaders, Fahmy Fazil has been involved in politics with the Parti Keadilan Rakyat since 1999. The Breakfast Grill caught up with the first-time MP on his electoral experience, post-GE14 developments, and how he intends to prove himself to his constituents. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Arvind Yuvaraj and Christine Wong, this has been Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.